Hello, everybody. Daniel Gregory. Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of The Perceptive Photographer. I'm really excited about this week's podcast because I'm joined by a very special guest for an in-studio interview. Gina White, a Seattle-based fine art photographer, has joined us. And we're talking today about what it means to really live life as a photographer, live life as a creative individual, and how you kind of balance all those different struggles and aspects you might have as you're working through a creative life. She's also got great news. She's finished a project, which I'm sure she'll be excited to tell you about a little bit later in the interview. So Gina, tell me, how did you get started in photography?
It's been almost 25 years. And I went to a live concert outdoors at Seattle Center. And I remember having a little point and shoot camera and wishing I had a zoom lens. And talked to my dad the next day and he says, oh, I have a camera in the closet. I'll just send it to you. Well, that was the beginning of the end.
So it's your dad's fault.
Yeah, it's all dad's fault.
I'm sure he appreciates hearing that all the time from you.
Yeah.
And so what kind of camera was that?
It was an Olympus OM4.
So film camera.
Yes, of course.
Which brings us to an interesting part about you. You're mostly an analog-based photographer.
Yes, I do use digital when it's warranted, but my heart is definitely in the darkroom.
And what is it about that experience in the darkroom that, you know, has your heart sit there?
The hands-on of it, the tactile, which ironically, most of my images have a tactile element in them, even though they're two-dimensional on a piece of paper, within the texture of the subject matter, within the texture of the process, within the texture of the actual physical paper.
And so what is it about that texture that's so important? Because I think that's something for a lot of photographers today. They're used to looking at things on a screen, or they're maybe getting prints back from Costco or something, so they kind of have a glossiness. So what is it about that tactical piece that's so important?
I think life has texture. And what am I expressing but life, right? Having my hands in it, touching, feeling a physical object as opposed to looking at it on a screen inspires me more in my work than, like I said, working on a screen. That being said, even the stuff that I put online has a textural element, but the making of it, it's important to me to have that tactile experience.
In the analog world, there definitely seems to be a group that's entrenched into that's kind of the right way of photography. And you don't seem to have that same hang up around film versus digital or analog versus digital. You seem to be much more encompassing in your approach to how you deal with the vastness of photography. So how is it you're able to not be kind of stuck in the past as being the right way, even though that is really where your heart lies? Does that question make sense?
It does. For a long time now, I tell my students, anybody I work with, choose your tool. I often used to get asked to shoot black and white or color, and I would answer, depends on the subject. Depends on what it is. I think the more tools you have in your toolbox, the more you're able to express really what you want to express. With analog photographers that get stuck and entrenched in that, part of it's a fear of it going away, which would be very sad for many of us. But those of us that work in that world, I think the healthier way to go at that is to realize that, yes, maybe your paper will go away. Maybe your film will go away. To find ways to adapt and or continue to make your own paper, which is why I've kind of gone into the alternative process world. Because like I said, that aspect of the hands-on tactile part of that process is really important to me. So I need to be able to keep that alive.
You mentioned fear as a component of going away. Do you think that stifles the creative process a little bit in that? Or do you think that is just...
I think it has the potential to do so. I think it's healthier to open yourself up a little bit. You don't have to embrace it fully. You don't have to go fully digital. One of the more interesting and fun things that's happening right now is hybrid processes, where you maybe make a digital negative, but then you come back down to the chemical side of things in the darkroom and physically print in processes that come from the beginning of photography. I think that's amazing.
Oh, yeah, I agree. I think that's one of the best times in the photographic history because there is no limit in terms of shoot color, shoot black and white, historical process, modern process. They have blended together so well. And photography is such an expansive medium. But yet, you know, there's a whole generation out there that's never been exposed to anything but Instagram and digital. And so for as they start to come back and discover that, oh, wait, there was something before Instagram. Mm-hmm. And we did things differently, and that it's accessible to them. So it's not like they have to give up everything they've learned and figured out. Mm-hmm. They can overlay that on top and come back to that process.
Well, and the interesting thing with particularly the phone apps like Instagram and Pixlr-matic and those things is the younger generation that are shooting that way are slowly realizing that that came from somewhere. The Holga-esque look, those things came from somewhere, and then they're curious about that and want to know how that was originally came about. So in a way, it's kind of bringing them back to the other side as well.
How are you dealing with the end of the Holga factory?
I'm sad. I have many Holgas. I shouldn't be sad. Are you
going to stockpile them?
No, I think I have enough. And mostly just the basic ones, so that they should last for a while. As long as I have gaffer tape, we're all good.
And they're supposed to leak, so that's fine.
Yeah, that's half the fun.
So earlier you mentioned in your teaching and working with students, mm-hmm. You have a stellar reputation as a teacher.
Well, thank you.
And, you know, a lot of students, you know, reference you as a source of inspiration, and they've learned so much from you over the years. How did teaching come about for you? How did you make that step into that role?
It was my mentor and advisor through school was Claire Garut. She literally changed my life in so many ways. So at some point I realized that's what I want to do. I want to pass that enthusiasm and that passion on to somebody else, even if it's one person. It turns out that teaching is even, I think sometimes even more fun than actually doing the photography itself. To see that light come on in somebody's face when they realize what they can do is amazing.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's one of the most interesting things about being in the classroom is you learn so much more by teaching. Because one, you actually have to know what you're doing. You can't just be like, oh, it's sort of like this, and you can't wing it. But at the same time, there's such a connection that you can make with people, and they give so much back to you as the instructor, which is the part I had forgotten because I taught 20 years ago. And then to come back to teaching now is one of the things where I really have had to try to figure out what that experience is. Mm-hmm. It's so great in the classroom. It really is a gift.
It is really, really fun. And to watch them, I teach black and white one right now. So to watch them throughout their process, how they grow and venture into their own style and their own vision and their own avenue of it is really, really an amazing experience.
How has the teaching impacted the way you photograph?
I learn stuff from my students every day. They may ask a question in a different way. They may ask me a question I hadn't thought of before. So it's constantly keeps me on my toes. So it constantly has me learning and growing and visually growing as well through their work.
How do you know when an image is good? How do you know when you have a good image? Because you have to, I mean, and what brings me to that is
when
I'm thinking
makes
about,
me cry?
Well, I'm just thinking about the ones where you talk about your students, you know, and they put up a lot of work that's probably not good. And then at some point they put up work that is better and good. So how do you know when... How do you know when the photograph's good?
It's interesting. Somehow when you look at a photograph that you can tell that they've put their heart into it, that they've been true to themselves, it shows. It comes through in the photograph. You can talk about composition. You can talk about lights, darks, et cetera. And I have my own visual, but I've also learned from many others. But did they really put themselves into it?
When you first answered that question, you said, when you look at a photograph, that makes you cry. So how important is the emotional connection for you in the work?
Extremely. Extremely. I can make a photograph by somebody telling me what they want. But most of the photographs that are truly my favorites, something in them has moved me. And to be able to capture that and express that and share that with others is why I do it. I think that's the reason for taking the pictures in the first place.
How often do you get a good photograph?
Oh, gosh. Oh, gosh. Every once in a while. It comes when it comes. And oftentimes at this stage in the game, I know it when it happens. Not always, but I the really, really poignant ones, definitely, like, there's something that stirs there.
Yeah. I find it interesting as I look back at my photo career, the less and less good photographs I take. Mm-hmm. Where when I was first starting out, you know, you think, wow, I've got
everything's
like,
amazing.
Everything's amazing and everything's good. You know, and I have people ask me now, like, well, how many good photos do you get? And I'm like, you know, if I can get a couple a year that I don't mean good, but like great. Like they emotionally
like
move
amazing.
Me.
Yeah.
I can, I think, well, that's a really good year. You know, I can get maybe, you know, some great ones. And to your point, and I don't mean just couch art great. Like, well, that's a beautiful sunset that hangs over my couch, which is a fine photograph and it serves its purpose. But photos that really move me to my core are so rare.
Yeah.
And it's a really interesting because so many things have to come together, like you said, beyond composition.
Yes.
It's
you have to be able to shut the outside world out
and
for
be really
that moment.
Present in that moment.
Yeah.
And then I think for me, it's almost worse when I know I've experienced the moment.
And it passes.
And I've missed it with the camera. Because I don't mind missing it. Like, I love finding the moment, even when I don't have my camera. And I'm like, wow, I just saw something special. But then to be on the other side where it's like, not only did I see something special, but I had the camera and I was monkeying around with a setting or focus or something. And I missed the moment. So now I've missed it twice. I missed it by being present and I missed it behind the camera. And so it's a weird.
Yeah. And sometimes things out of your control. I don't do a lot of street photography, but there was an image that I took a couple years ago that I saw it. I knew it was the moment and I snapped the shutter and there was a woman that walked into the frame as I was taking the photograph and I had no idea how far she'd gotten into it. And I was just livid until I developed it. Turns out she perfected it. So yay.
Yeah. Sometimes we get a great gift from the photographic gods as they align everything up. You have a lot of key phrases I've heard people use over the years. About photography, you know, work clean, keep it safe, put your stuff away, you know, stuff like that. But what's your mantra? What's the thing you go out with every day in your own photography? What's your kind of mantra that you use to really find that presence that you're looking for in your photography?
Breathe, I think. I tend to be hard on myself, especially when I'm close to a deadline or need to have something come together. And at some point I get so wrapped up in the to-do things in it that I can no longer be present in the moment. I can no longer work creatively. Too many distractions. So it's good to step away at that moment in time. And sometimes that's not easy to do, especially when you're having a deadline looming. But it's also what draws me to photography. When I'm behind the camera, the rest of the world goes away. The chaos that goes on around me goes away. Also in the dark room. Even though I work in a community dark room, when I'm in there, I'm calm and present in the moment. So it's also the attraction. Right?
So you mentioned the stepping away. So you live a very creative life. You do a lot of things that are most people consider very creative pieces, from making jewelry to making all sorts of different things. So how can you talk a little bit about what it means to you to have a creative life and to immerse yourself in creative experiences?
It's definitely been a choice. It took a long time to make. For a long time, I lived in that world where you had to get a real job. The more I worked in my artistic endeavors, the more I realized that that's what was important to me. And that's where I wanted to be. So slowly but surely, I started to make choices in my living style, in day-to-day things. That would allow me to do more and more of that. to the point that I live really, really on the cheap. as much as possible.
I think that's the mantra of the person living the creative life.
Yes. But to be honest with you, it's totally worth it. It's totally worth it to go give up going out every night with your friends. My friends are all here at the photo center. So this is my social life.
Well, that's one of the things I've always respected about you and the way you work and the way you've chosen to live your life is there's not a sense of regret or that you've
None.
Given something up. Right. And I think for a lot of people who are thinking about taking that step, that's the part is they can only focus on that which they're going to give up. So I'm going to have to give up going out with my friends. I'm going to have to give up a new car. I'm going to have to give up whatever it is. But yet, from what you're describing, there's infinitely more in the payoff of living a life that has the integrity and essence of who you really are versus trying to be something you're not.
Yeah. Yeah. I recently had a friendship with a woman that is a naturopath and very intuitive. And she tries to pass that on to other people. So last year, about not too long after this time, she publicly said, I am going to fully embrace who I am and be true to myself and walk the walk. I'm going to be who I am. And that really rang true with me. It's happened in stages, but as of June 1st, I took the leap and quit my day job.
Congratulations, which was still.
Terrifying. And just put my whole heart and soul into what I've always wanted to do. So, and it was an amazing choice. I'm so happy I did. I don't remember how I had time to work.
Yeah.
Because that's all I do.
Well, it's funny because you hear that from people who retire. And yet you're not retired. You're working more now than you probably ever have.
No, but but everything is focused on that. I don't have to split my attention. And that's slowly been happening over several years. But this was the biggest leap I had taken.
So you've mentioned several times the importance of community and the photo center. And for those of you listening to the podcast, you can probably hear the dark room behind us. We're actually in the photo center recording this. So you can hear the clinging and banging of the analog world down here. What is it about community that's important? And then what is it specifically about the Photographic Center Northwest up here in Seattle's community that's so important to you?
It is what's nurtured me the whole way through almost. I started taking photographs about 2 years before I came to the Photographic Center Northwest. And that's been 20 plus years ago now, which is surreal. But it really has nurtured me in my art form, in my person, in my path, really. Had it not, I'm a completely different person from the person that walked in. I could have never imagined teaching, which I love so much. And the people here and the instructors here and my students, they all inspire me every day.
Wow. So the inspiration you find, you know, coming from the community with such a diverse group, I'm sure there's a group of people you've identified with more closely over those 20 plus years. You know, how have those friendships evolved and changed over that time period? Because you've all grown as artists. I mean, you all, on some level, have pushed each other, supported, used your shoulder to cry on. punched a few times for being obnoxious. but how is that kind of core group? What is that? How have you guys changed and evolved over the years?
People have kind of come and gone, but there are a handful of people that have been here for as long. Ann Palison, our former gallery director, and now she does outreach. We just really, when things are difficult, we understand the path that we're walking and kind of help each other over the rough spots. When things are good and good things are coming together and we have shows, we have events in our lives, we walk that path together. So a support group and a family in a way.
And I think that's important for people to realize art doesn't exist in a silo as an individual. And a creative life can't exist as an individual because creativity has to be expressed beyond oneself.
Well, and I can't imagine how much harder it would be without the community here. there are times when you need to work on your own, but really when it comes down to it, eventually you need some commiseration, some coaching. And the diversity here is such that anything you need to know, anything you want to talk through, anything you want to learn, it's all here. And sometimes it's from a member, sometimes it's from an instructor, sometimes it's from a student, sometimes it's just from somebody who walked in the door. There is an endless source of inspiration and help here. So,
what other things provide sources of inspiration for you? Who are photographers you look to? Who are artists? Who are other components we look at?
First thing comes to mind, Eugene Atze, of course. Also, Margaret Cameron. Her picture of Sir Herschel is one of my favorite all-time photographs. It's on my phone.
Mr. Fixer himself.
Yes, Mr. Fixer himself. Richard Avedon, many of my inspirations. It's their work, but it's also sometimes more the human being. Richard Avedon was out on his own expedition of doing work when he passed. So keep doing. Don't ever stop.
Besides photographers, what other things provide inspiration for you?
Music. I oftentimes will use music to edit work. Particularly, there's a musician, Dustin O'Halloran, is kind of my go-to to center myself. All art forms. I love to paint. I'm not very good at it, but I do play with that. Many different creative avenues.
Why do you think music is so common among photographers? Like, that's a reoccurring pattern you hear. What do you think it is between music and photography?
I don't know. I don't know. And it's funny because you asked me that question because yesterday I really realized that I repeatedly come back to that place.
Yeah, because for me, like Miles Davis is a huge mentoring influence for me, and the music plays in the background. And
it just brings me to that place that I need to be to do the work.
So. Yeah. And I can't play a musical instrument to save my soul. So for me, it is more the listening part.
Yeah.
I mean, I've tried every instrument there is, and I just can't
try
do
a handful.
All.
I wasn't very good at it either.
What keeps you up at night that you worry about with your art?
With my art?
Yeah, it's not therapy.
No. It sometimes is. Working through different aspects of processes to get what I want out of it. Because of my teacher, I'm constantly developing new skills. This morning at 4 a.m. it was, how am I going to feed myself during the summer quarter? But that's an ongoing thing. That's not really my art form. It's just a matter of like, let's make sure we have food in the fridge.
Cool. I have a couple of just quick rapid fire, one word answer kind of things. So a favorite movie?
Oh God, Amelie.
Favorite book?
A Place in the World Called Paris.
Your favorite photographer?
Eugene Atze.
Favorite food?
Oh,
I know you're a foodie, so that's a tough one.
Actually, ironically, a good steak.
Right. Surprising. I would have gone with something French oriented.
I do love the French food and the rich foods, but yeah. Great. Oh, and sage butter and truffle pasta is quite wonderful.
So
thank you, Michael.
So your favorite food is French steak pasta.
Yeah. Good food.
Favorite camera?
My Mamiya. My Mamiya C330. It's a twin lens.
What about that is?
I've shot with twin lenses for quite a while. For 13 years, I shot with a 35 millimeter, and most people go to medium format for the bigger negative. I did not. I went for the format and the viewpoint. Daniel likes to tease me in class that I looked down and saw that the world was square.
You did look down and see the world was square. That's not teasing. That's fact.
Yes. Most of the time it is in my world.
Okay, it's not square. It's a 1-to-1 ratio.
It's square.
It's equal.
It's square. I like square. I had two or three before I bought the Mamiya, and part of my frustration was they have fixed lenses, and I could only get so close and still focus. So I did a little research and found that the Mamiya you can change lenses on. Well, as it turns out, it also has a bellow, so I can stand a foot away from something and still focus.
Nice.
It's heavier than I like to carry, but worth it. Cool. Definitely worth it.
Favorite emotion?
I don't know a name for it.
That's a good emotion.
Yes.
The smile on your face tells me that it's a good.
Yeah, if I could show you that, I guess. it's that moment when you realize magic. Yeah.
Favorite sound?
Click of a shutter.
Any specific camera?
Yeah, the Mamiya.
That's definitely your camera. If you love the sound, the feel, the look, that's definitely your camera.
I have had cameras that didn't work for me. So.
So earlier you mentioned thinking about the summer quarter, having food in the fridge. We've talked a little bit about the trade-off in corporate world versus living a life that you choose. Mm-hmm. That there's trade-offs there. But how do you splurge on yourself?
I buy myself a new toy. Yesterday it was a calibration monitor tool because I was having a little trouble and I don't own my own. I had to wait for somebody to bring me one. How do I splurge on myself really though is sometimes I will buy a nice bottle of wine. I take students to Paris every year and my splurge there is to go buy new scarves and food. To bring back, which is funny because I fight to keep food in the fridge.
So I think one of the things that people struggle with a lot is fear that they create in their own head. That's an impediment to them getting their work done. And at the end of the day, ultimately, it's our own fear that prevents us from taking any action, which is a good thing because sometimes it's there to protect us. It keeps us from doing really dumb things.
But as
creative individuals, it also prevents us from doing amazing things. So for you, what is your greatest fear that you have around your creativity and then around your photography?
It's not as good as I sometimes think.
And where do you think that comes from?
I think it comes from I still every day am amazed at the experiences I've had. That I would ever travel to Paris is still mind-boggling to me, let alone as many times as I've been, that I've been published several times now and soon to be again. I just never imagined that I could do the things that I'm doing. And so sometimes that doubt comes out and pushing through it can be hard. That's a good place where the community comes in and goes, no, oh my God. Once in a while, I need that reassurance. More than once in a while.
So not to detract from that being your fear, but you have to hear that from your students all the time about that similar fear of, is my work good enough?
Oh, yeah.
What do you tell them?
It's normal. It is absolutely normal. Don't let it stop you. Actually, it's interesting, Daniel, you teach have taught black and white too, and early on, and during my black and white, my early classes, nobody discussed that. Nobody. As a matter of fact, clear through the end of my school career, we never discussed that fear issue really at any length. So I think it's important for artists to realize that that's not just you. It's okay. We all have that moment. And if you have the choice between giving into that fear and just pushing through and doing it anyway, the very least you will get, you will have learned something. The very best you will get is it's amazing and now you know it again.
There's a part of me who's, having had that same fear. And I refer to corporate America as just the broad, not a specific corporation this time. I do rant sometimes about specific ones, I get that.
But, yes, you do.
But in general, what we deem as corporate America, I do think from an early age, we entrench that we're not good enough. And that, because what that does is it has us fall in line to become somewhat automatons for the corporate machine.
Yeah, do what we're told.
Exactly. Do what you're told. Hold the line.
It's easier.
Keep things moving. It is easier. And so, but when you have that artistic mindset, that creative mindset, and I think you can have that creative mindset in corporate America, which is what causes amazing things to happen in corporate America. It also is what causes great friction in corporate America is that creative energy wants to ooze out. But that we work so hard for decades to break that in people that it is okay to be good and that the value judgment is not the stacked rank comparison against others. It's the stacked rank comparison against yourself.
Yes.
And we so build that into our culture that it's really hard, particularly as an instructor. I see it every one of my students in every class, whether it's a beginning class, an advanced class. Mm-hmm. I deal with it myself every day, but it is really interesting how we have created that structure.
Well, and I think that is an aspect where I think art has value. One, it teaches you to think outside the box, walk around things, think of it in a different way. But two, to come to a place where you want to do it enough that you push through that and you keep working and you keep learning. I hope I never stop learning. I think that would be a very sad day.
That would be a horrible experience.
No, I couldn't imagine. But that's what keeps urging us forward and making us better and better and better.
So we've danced around this a little bit. You've talked briefly about it, but I have a one word question for you. Paris.
I am about to publish my first book.
Congratulations.
13 years in the making. Although for 10 of those years, I did not know it was a book.
As is much of the process sometimes. We just don't know what things are.
I knew it was something. I just didn't know what form it would take. And I'm terrified and excited. And terrified. But I'm pretty happy with where it's at right now. And it's nice to have that all come together. It's been a very long road to get here. And to have that finally be something.
Yeah, it's been really interesting to watch that experience, because you and I have known each other for a number of years now. And I remember when you first kind of started down Paris as a concept. Mm-hmm. And to see that.
Were you here that long ago?
Yeah. Well, I was here when you were debating your thesis. So I knew a couple of years before.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
In that, almost like the tides move in and out, you're all in on Paris, frustrated, tide goes back out. There's this kind of movement. It's been really neat to see that actually finally coalesce into something so meaningful for you. And looking at the images and the image selection and the sequencing and the dedication and commitment you've had to really tell a story about Paris, which is probably the most photographed city.
Yeah.
If not.
Which makes it more scary.
Yeah. So there's to be willing, going back to that fear concept, to be willing to stand there and say, I have an experience of Paris that is unique to me, that matters to me, that I think is worth sharing. In the face of the fact that tens of millions of photographs have been published about Paris, is something to be commended. And it's something that's interesting about photography. And you and I have had this conversation a number of times. Your book of Paris is unlike anybody else's experience in book of Paris. So even though the place has been photographed so much, you really have brought a very unique Gina-esque experience to that.
Yeah. Yeah, that is one of the daunting things about choosing that particular subject. But I'm kind of pleased that I'm choosing it as a first step, because if I can bring something of myself to that subject matter and make it unique in some way, then I could pretty much do it with anything. Besides the fact that I do have a love affair with Paris that is obsessive.
A little bit.
A little bit. And to be able to pay tribute to that is feels pretty good.
So one of the things when I look at the images you have of Paris, and you talked a little bit about this earlier with the notion of the texture, but there is a delicacy and a softness to a lot of your work that invokes a sense of memory, recollection. So there's clarity within the image, but it's not a tack sharp experience. What is it about your style, that notion of memory comes into play and reflection, and how do those places gel within your style, and why is that important to you?
I think reflection is a good word. It's not one I've come across myself. I think that in our everyday world, we tend to get so wrapped up in the daily, as my friend artist says, the daily drama.
We do have a lot of it.
The stuff we have to do.
I like to call that Facebook.
Yeah. That's not a have to do. That sometimes we forget to stop and really look at things, magical things. There's a very old tree, hundreds of years old, that is just outside my house, that there's a little air fern that grows on it. And I walk by it every day and I greet it every day. I'm sure people think I'm nuts. But we need to recognize those things to realize that this world really is amazing. It's not what's on the TV. And I hold those things precious. And so I hope to bring that to my work, to recognize those things and remind people, look around you. Everything's amazing. Have to stop to look.
It is amazing. I think it's one of the things that when people ask me what makes a photographer go from a technician to an artist. And for me, that is one of several steps that is in that journey, is the recognition of just how amazing our world really is. And that it's not bad and we're not completely divided and everybody's not individualized in silos, that we are all, everything is so connected. And the photographer sees those moments of connection. They see those moments of clarity and they're able to solidify those into a tangible format of a photograph so that we do start to see where things overlap, where we have commonalities, how things go together.
Yes. I think that's very true. We tend to be so inundated with so much of the other that I think it's really important to bring that to the table and say, no, stop for a second, look around to balance that out. I hope.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Which brings me to my last question. So if you had one piece of advice you were going to give somebody who is trying to really own their experience as a photographer and as a creative person, that would kind of move them forward, help them embrace what they're trying to do, what piece of advice would you give them?
Take your time. Take the time. I think more importantly, not necessarily take your time, but take the time to really be in it. Really recognize what you're doing. Let go of whatever's going on in your day or in your life, which is not easy. It's not easy, but set yourself time aside to just be with it, whether you're photographing, whether you're processing, whether you're printing, whether you're trying to work out what a project is, because it's infinitely rewarding.
It is.
When it comes together, it's just like, oh,
yeah. No, it is amazing.
This is why I do this.
So thank you so much for the time. Really do appreciate it. If I say wanted to get a copy of that Paris book, how would I go about doing that?
It's for sale on my website, GinaWhitePhoto.com. The book is a limited first edition hardback dust cover. There will only be 100. The book itself is $100. And then you have the option to buy a book with a handmade print as well, analog, for $250.
And the book is due out in the next couple
mid-January.
Of weeks. Mid-January. All right. So we're getting really close.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, finally.
Well, congratulations on that. Thanks again so much for the time.
Thank you.
Well, this concludes this episode of The Perceptive Photographer. I hope you found the interview with Gina White to be as interesting and enlightening as I did. You can always subscribe to us on iTunes, or you can find us on www.theperceptivephotographer.com. And just once again, if you're interested in picking up Gina's book and seeing her work from Paris, her website is www.ginawhitephoto.com. I hope you have a great week behind the camera, and we'll see you next time.